Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Now, you're very welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown, the podcast that looks at the XG and performance of Celtic FC. It's been a crazy week. I'll take you through the week in a life of a decision maker at Celtic. You draw against Hibs with thanks to a last minute goal, and then you get battered 4-1 by a club 40 places behind you in the UEFA rankings. You've now lost 8-2 on aggregate to Sparta Prague. The club's in trouble, but it's business as usual. You prepare for Ross County in the League Cup. You lose that to a team that have scored 10 goals in the league so far. You're out. The fans come down to the stadium in protest. It's reached boiling point. You've now got 2 wins from 10. You're out of the Champions League, out of the Europa League, out of the League Cup, and you're 11 points behind Rangers. It's only November. What do? Well, you don't choose to sack the manager. You choose to give him your backing over Zoom and claim that your decision will not be swayed by the mob, the same mob that spent their own money to keep the club afloat over the last year. You choose to put the results at risk, the success of the club at risk, to spite your own fans and to save your own ego. That is a long week for a decision maker at the helm of Celtic FC. Alan Morrison, Juco James, it's just not getting any better, is it?
Well, if you ask, if that was an open-ended question about what do? It's 9 a.m. here, and I think I'm going to start drinking after listening to that. So I'm nice and numb in time for the Milan game later today. Yeah, it's been a really rough week. And I think, there's so much that we can't know. That's the hard part. Outsiders, supporters, the internal dynamics of what's going on, the decision-making process that's unfolding. With such lack of information, imperfect information, people are obviously and justifiably upset and expressing that unsettledness. And I've, probably been one of the more critical people across the board all season. But I do have empathy for these people on a personal basis. I mean, this is a tough spot they're in. This is part of why I thought good decision making early needed to happen, because once you start getting into this kind of chaos, making good decisions in the midst of pressure and emotions and, internal politics that are probably unfolding and power grabs and, it's almost like every person for themselves type of thing that starts to unfold with those kind of dynamics. So it's really unfortunate. Like I said, I have empathy for the individuals involved, because I'm sure they're all trying their best. That's the worst part about this. When you start getting into these spirals of pressure and bad decision-making, they kind of feed along themselves and, they think they're doing their best. They think their judgment is the right way. It's just really, really rough.
Alan, do you go along the same lines as that?
No, absolutely. I think history shows us that when you have a sustained period of success, label it complacency if you want, label it hubris, but certainly that edge perhaps comes off. And I'm not talking about just the players, I'm talking about the organisation as a whole, but the leadership and the tone is set from the top. I mean, one of the things that you would always admire about, let's say, Alex Ferguson, who's probably a modern UK exemplar of how to manage a football club. Now, clearly he was an exception, but the many lessons to be learned was the fact that, despite Manchester United's dominance throughout the 1990s especially, at periodic points there were some quite surprising decisions made, especially around number twos, coaching staff, even key players like Beckham, Jap Stam, for example, that were let go or sold, or people swapped in and out of key positions. And it almost, it kept the blood flowing. It kept everyone on point. It kept everyone with their eyes on the goal. Kept everyone on their toes, frankly, right? I don't think we see that at Celtic. I think we see a pretty set methodology and personnel in the key decision-making positions. And we just don't see that freshness of new ideas coming in. I think in terms of the reaction, we're in a no-win situation, right? Fans of other clubs just look at Celtic fans and laugh at them, saying, you know, you've been winning for years and now you lose a few games, you're up in arms type of thing. And they'll have no sympathy, and rightly so. But what I would say, and it's probably maybe for another in depth for another podcast, is there is a lack of trust fundamentally between a lot of Celtic fans and the board. And we've probably got our own reasons for that. Mine date back to probably, you know, just before 2012 and the events thereof, and the sort of Resolution 12 and the way that the governance of Scottish football has been mishandled. And when you're winning and the trophies are there and success is flowing, you kind of just get along with it. Mm-hmm. But when things start to go bad, you fall back to, you know, do I trust these people? And a lot of people don't. And therefore you're going to get a bad reaction.
Yeah, and we try to keep emotion out of this podcast as much as possible and look at the data and see if the data backs up what we're trying to say. A lot of the time it actually does. On the Alex Ferguson point, and it's the last point I'm going to make on this, is that the reason that they were so successful and able to adapt is because they were absolutely ruthless in their strives for success. And I believe at the minute Celtic are not being ruthless enough with people just because of who they are and because they're standing in the club. And yes, you have to give that respect, but respect has been paid and time is up. And now it's time to make some really, really tough decisions that will benefit the club going forward, because the club always comes first. Nobody is bigger than the club, regardless of how big of a legend they are off the club. That's the last thing I'm going to say on the matter. Moving on to the matter at hand, which, look, the Sparta Prague's one, that defeats one thing. That's in Europa League. It's come at a bad time. The Ross County 2-0 defeat is unforgivable, in my opinion, in the League Cup. It's now the first cup in how many years that Celtic will not win domestically. And it's also losing to a team that is way below the standards of where Celtic are at. So, James, where are we looking at first when we look at this game? What does the data say? How bad was this performance?
Yeah, it was terrible. to summarize, I do regularly kind of a pre-game performance benchmarking tweet thread to kind of lay out some metrics as far as, you know, what kind of opponent are we facing? What's their level competitively? And over the last five seasons, how have we performed against that opponent specifically, home and away, that kind of thing, just to provide an analytical framework for benchmarking. It's not necessarily predictive, but it's just a kind of a nice, simple way to judge performance in a one-off game. And I got some interesting feedback, shall we say, maybe some Ross County supporters that didn't like my framing of our loss to Ross County. Because if you look at some of the, call them power indexes, like ELO or 538's soccer power index, effectively Ross County is like a top of the table League One EFL club, bottom of the table, kind of Wigan level, maybe. I'm sorry, top of the of League One into the very bottom of the championship. And so that's not a good opponent. Mm-hmm. You know, that's someone particularly at home. So,
which is remarkable for a town of about 4,000 people.
Right? Yeah, exactly. That's to their credit. Yeah, I mean, it's all context, right? Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they're punching above their weight, I think, for who they are and their wages and that kind of thing, and their geography. I mean, getting players to go up there, that kind of thing. So, yeah, that's not meant at all to demean Ross County. It's just the context of opponent. So for basically the level of XG that we created in that game, the number of chances and the quality of them were just really poor within that context. And that's something I've been harping on for over a year now, which is the defensive issues are you know, there, and the mistakes in Europe have been consistent, and it really seems like forever now. But chance creation continues to be a major problem. And it's gotten worse. The spiral that we've entered into this season, I think there's justifiably a lot of focus on the defensive side, given all of the big errors and the goals being conceded. But on an absolute basis, our chance, the amount of chances that we're surrendering is still not crazy. It's, you know, in the league, for example, it's still less than one in total XG that we're conceding per game, which is up. It's definitely up, but that's not an absolute level that's all that high. Where we've really become mediocre to even, you know, average is in our chance creation, particularly when you look at the firepower that we have and you look at the talent that we have, the resources that we've spent on creative players, and that the style that the manager likes to play. I mean, it's not like we're setting up like Steve Clark's Kilmarnock,
yeah,
and we've changed the way we're playing, and that's, you know, that philosophy has shifted and that our chance creation has fallen. So we've basically gone all out attacking with really good attacking players, and we're not getting anywhere near the commensurate amount of chance creation that we should be. And again, we've talked about this in recent episodes about then creating the defensive vulnerabilities, and how that's compounding. So this was just another episode of the same thing. I mean, for us to have, I mean, we really only had four, let's call it well-struck balls. they weren't necessarily shots on goal, but, you know, 4 to 5 where you could say the player actually put good contact on the ball and it was in the direction of the goal, you know,
and that
includes, I think Rogic is one that was wide, and you know, Iyer had a decent contact. You had the free kick from Edouard. I mean, we basically, if you exclude Edouard's free kick, I mean, we were close to one in XG created, which is just, you know, horrific in the context of that opponent at home with the talent that we have.
Yeah. And the fact that we're seeing the defensive frailties all for the sake of this weird formation that Neil Lennon seems to want to play, with the wing backs bombing forward and the three midfielders attacking with very little there to actually defend against a counterattack. So if you're not getting the output going forward from that, then there's no point in doing it if you're going to be frail at the back as a result. Alan, I know you're caught up with this game as well. Was this the same as always for this season, or was it an outlier of a game? Does it continue along the same kind of trends that we've been seeing across the season as well?
It was a continuation of an erosion of collective confidence and belief, and a collective lack of clarity around what it is that Celtic are trying to do from a strategic tactical perspective on the pitch. What I saw against Sparta was a collapse in confidence of the players, and that's an emotional thing to say. But what I mean by that, how would you measure that in terms of actual behaviours on the pitch? You measure it in the attacking sense, because players were not taking responsibility to be patient enough to wait for the right pass to play in the right area. They were just banging it into the box. So they'd get it and they'd say, right, I've got it forward. I've got it in towards closer to the goal. Whereas what good teams do will say, that pass isn't on. Christie's moved too early. I'm going to delay the pass. I'm going to go back out. I'm going to recycle. I'm going to try again. That's what you do when you're confident. When you're not confident, you pass responsibility on. You say, I've got the ball forward. And then in defence, it's almost the opposite. You become ponderous. You get crippled. Your decision making is not switched on. The hesitancy around the 50-50s in the box, the lack of reaction time. Some of it was down to Brown, because he physically can't react as quickly as a defensive midfielder needs to. And a lot of it was a collective failing in confidence. And as you know, at a human level, when your confidence goes, your decision making skills are hugely impaired. What I saw against Sparta was a collective failure of confidence. Against Ross County, I think this is on the manager in terms of how Lennon set the team up. I mean, he basically, against, as you said rightly, James, what is actually a really poor side, not, and again, no disrespect to not Ross County, because they're phenomenal what they've achieved to stay in the SPFL and, you know, to have attendances higher than the actual population of the town. It's just a brilliant story. But to play, you've essentially got five defenders on the pitch, okay? You've got five defenders on the pitch, and then you put Brown in central midfield. You put Brown in central midfield on his own, literally on his own. He's parading in an area that's around 200 square yards. that he has all to himself, because you've pushed Christie wide on one side and you've pushed Rogic wide on the other side, which suits neither player. If you're Christie, it looks like you've been told, because this is what he did continually, to cut inside and cross, or to cut inside and shoot. You've then got Rogic, who never crosses the ball, but over the last two or three games has attempted about 10, 15 crosses. That's Rogic's game. He's a number 10. He plays within the width of the penalty area, and he feeds balls through, and occasionally he'll take shots on the edge of the box. Christie is a player that you want in the centre of the field, disrupting the opposition with his energy and his tackling ability, and breaking forward and getting beyond the strikers and getting into goal-scoring opportunities. So not only have you played five defenders, and as we discussed last week, you've got two wing-backs who can't cross the ball and create very little. You've pushed your two most creative players out into their space. Laxalt didn't receive a single pack pass in the whole of the first half until the 45th minute, and didn't make one. So he wasn't progressing the ball at all. Weirdly, because McGregor wasn't playing, we were right side dominant. So Elhamid banged in, I think, I'll just check the number, because we like to be precise on Celtic by numbers. He banged in 13 unsuccessful crosses during the game. And between Christie, Laxalt and Elhamid, 27 crosses were banged in. You then had two strikers. Those two strikers were sat between two, in a very deep block between two banks of a four and a five. And there's no space there. So how are you going to get the ball to them, especially as you vacated the park? So what we did is we sat and watched Scott Brown rack up over 100 passes, of which only 10 actually took any opponents out of the game at all. And if I just check very quickly, and I'm sorry I didn't prepare this, his expected assists was actually 0.2, let's say, throughout the whole game. And actually, he played the pass of the match, Brown, to be fair, when he took out the whole team to put Elhamid in behind, and then Elhamid couldn't find anyone with the cross. And I'm not criticising Scott Brown's performance, because actually Scott Brown did a perfectly reasonable job with what he had to work with. He's just completely the wrong player to be in that position, utterly dominating possession for the whole team. Well, you had five defenders. And then the whole defensive organisation and shape was exposed, because Ross County's first goal again came on the break. Bitton got dragged out. Brown got dragged to the ball. Four of them got dragged to the ball. Reid skipped past a player. And suddenly the whole thing is systemic failure again. The whole thing, everyone's out of position. Julian's scrambling. Everybody's struggling at that point. Yet you've got five defenders on the pitch and Scott Brown. You've got six defensive players against Ross County at home. So you're not creating anything. And once again, your defensive structures are failing.
You may not have this number to hand, but it might be something that you've seen when you're watching the game. So we're getting all these crosses in, right? And Arsenal are doing something similar right now, and they're one of the least creative.
Picked up on that.
They're one of the least creative.
33 crosses on Arteta's going, why aren't we scoring?
Exactly. Are you seeing the runs from Edouard, from Ajeti, from Klamala, when they're in the box, that they're expecting those crosses to come in? Or does it look like those crosses are just going in there with no real purpose?
So you're playing against a very low block, which means that the defence is backed right up against its own 18-yard box, and the gap between their defensive line and their midfield line is like a few yards, right? 5 yards at most. So there's really not a lot of space there. They've got three massive centre-backs to aim for, and you've got two centre-forwards, one of whose main asset is to drop deep and cause chaos by coming in from deep positions, dribbling, beating players, playing clever passes with teammates. And you've got another player who really is wanting to play in the penalty box, and he's going to take one touch to try and finish any chance he's got. So lumping crosses into either of those isn't really playing to the strengths of either player or indeed the players delivering the crosses. So it's just a fundamental mismatch of what you're trying to achieve versus what you should be trying to achieve. If you look at Edouard, and you think about when he used to play with Sinclair and McGregor on the left, there you had three skillful players who could interchange position, make runs. One would go into the box, one would go wide, one would go diagonal, and you had a certain unpredictability, and you played to the strengths of the players effectively.
Yeah, and if I could jump in here, so if I think about this, this is why I've my word of the season's been incoherence. So if you look at the incoherence of the selection, right? So with Brown included, basically six defensively oriented players. Let's say their relative strengths tilt defensively versus in attack versus Ross County at home. Then within that context, then the tactics that Alan pointed out, where Christie and Rogic were playing, then you throw in exactly what Alan had said, which is, I think confidence is part of this, obviously, but confidence in oneself, confidence in the game plan, right? Modern players are very smart. They have information. They get it. You know, they've been coached up through, youth levels to a degree. They have information and information age that players of bygone eras didn't have. So they're going to understand that some of this doesn't make any sense. They're not idiots. Mm-hmm. So there's confidence in the system. And I think a big part of this is, they've been attacked not only by their manager, but increasingly by supporters, which I'm sure they hear in the echo chamber. And if they didn't before, they sure as heck heard it on Sunday, is that they're not putting forth enough effort. And I don't know what Alan's data reflects, but I mean, there's certainly some of that. I mean, there's been some, decline in volumes from certain players like an Edouard with his pressing, that kind of thing. Yeah, but generally speaking, what it screams to me is players that have lacked confidence in general that are actually trying too hard. You know, they're forcing things, right? So when I'm watching other games right now, I watched Atalanta play Veronas on Sunday. If you pronounce that, I don't have Italian. I won't even say my Italian's bad. I have no Italian. So I don't know if Verona is pronouncing that correctly. But, there were triangles all over the place. Instances where Zapata, Atalanta, they lost 2-0, but how many times he got ball played to feet with triangles around him and players making runs. And I mean, it was just, it just pointed out how little we know what the hell we're doing right now. And to Alan's point, people are, the players are, seem to be forcing things a lot. And that's, people assign nefarious, intent to that at times. It's all that player's being selfish, somebody like Christie's shooting too much, being selfish, that kind of thing. I don't necessarily think it's selfishness. I think these guys are, lacking in confidence, lacking in the game plan, and they're being bombarded with, you're not trying hard enough. So they're trying really hard, and that's exhausting. Like, that's why they've also, I think after 60 minutes, they look like most of them have blown out their ass, is because they're out there in this context giving their effort. I mean, look at McGregor. I mean, McGregor's running around like a lunatic half the time, trying his best. Mm-hmm. Brown too. I mean, these guys are, to me, they all look like they're playing hard for the most part. And again, with some exceptions here and there. And it's just not working because of this context that, this is why I've been talking about structural problems that aren't being addressed and some simple changes. I mean, I think people are way underestimating how much this would improve if we literally just dropped Brown. I mean, that's how much damage this is doing now in the midfield structurally. And again, it's not because of him as a person, as a captain, as a leader, even as a player. I mean, trying his hardest, clearly. But some of these midfield issues and, basically just playing him with McGregor in midfield, if at all. I mean, as on Sunday, it was just Brown. Yeah. I mean, it's lunacy. And people keep saying, well, Lennon's tried everything. He hasn't tried everything. He hasn't dropped Brown yet, right? And go back to the St. Johnston game. I've talked about this before. St. Johnston got nothing through the midfield in that game until Brown came on. Nothing. They had one attempt down the side because of a misplayed ball. And, so some athleticism, some youth, and some presence in midfield. Mm-hmm. I think is kind of the first building block to start fixing some of this stuff. And until we make that huge call and huge decision, I mean, again, that's where after Ferencváros, I was convinced that Lennon was not going to make it. I mean, there was no, and he had, I mean, I expect Brown to play tonight.
Yeah.
This evening. And that is nuts that he has played in every European game, every big game. And at this point in his career, the damage that that's doing to our structure is immense.
Yeah. And I think Scott Brown has been quite good over the last couple of years. I mean, you don't become a bad player overnight, but age does catch up with you eventually. And we're just seeing that with Brown this season. Speaking of the last few years, so I suppose in the last couple of weeks, or the last week especially, across Celtic Twitter, there's been numerous stats thrown about how comparing the last 10 games to Tony Mowbray's last 10 games and then to John Barnes, who is widely regarded as one of the worst managers in Celtic's history. And it's a worse record. But let's delve a little bit deeper into that and compare Neil Lennon's performances to previous years. This year, where are this Celtic at, this team at, in terms of their performances? Because it's just, we're down across all platforms, right?
So the thing, Endo, we're having to have this conversation because Neil Lennon is still in role, and it looks like despite it being obvious to a lot of people that change is needed, there isn't going to be change. So this is really a sledgehammer that I'm going to take here, but no apologies, because clearly some key people still don't believe the decline that has actually occurred to Celtic's performances. And all I'm going to do is compare this season to last. So this is Lennon's Celtic 1920 to 2021. So when I think about a game, if you were to sort of ask me amongst the bloody hundreds of stats that I gather on every game, what are, you were to create like a stat box of what are the key things that you'd look at, if you forced me to pick on, like, you know, sort of in this case six things, you know, what would they be and why would they be? And I'm just going to quickly compare those key metrics across just six key team level performance metrics, Celtic and opposition, to make the point. So let's start with a couple of bits of good news, is that possession, I know possession doesn't win you games, but it's indicative of control. It's indicative of the extent to which you're at least maintaining the ball, and it tells you something. It doesn't tell you everything. It's all contextual. Possession is pretty much the same as it was last season. Celtic dominate to about 63% possession on average across all competitions, right? Higher in the SPFL, lower in Europe. And then let's go to the one little bit of good news. So what do you hear Neil Lennon shout more than any other word when we can hear what's actually going on in these empty stadiums? It's the word early. And he wants to get the ball early. He wants to get the ball forward as quickly as possible. How does that manifest itself in the stats? So I measure what's called packing. Packing is taking players out of the game with forward passes. So you think if you're trying to get the ball forward quicker, and especially playing a slightly more direct game, you're going to be taking more opponents potentially out of the game. You're going to be losing the ball a little bit more, but you're also going to be at times, you know, completing those passes. And indeed, our ability to get the ball forward and take opponents out of the game has gone up slightly on last season. It's about 3%. However, the opponents are achieving the same against Celtic, is up about 12%, which means by a degree of 12%, we're easier to play against in terms of the opponent can progress the ball through Celtic's defensive lines. Let's look at expected goals. It's our old favourite. Celtic's expected, if you take out penalties, because they're pretty kind of random and have a big impact on expected goals, but it don't actually tell you anything about how the team's playing, really. Expected goals is down 20%. That's a huge jump. Now, what point I made on Twitter the other night is, when I'm talking about these percentages, I know they're just numbers, but I'll try and give you a little bit of context. If any of these numbers were going up and down by anything between 1% and 5%, I'd be taking notice. And I'd be thinking, this is either, if it went, say, 5% up, I'd be thinking, this is quite a good improvement. If it was going 5% down, I'd be like, ooh, this is really concerning. Mm-hmm. Expected goals down 20%. Let's look at the opposition. Expected goals up 23%. Okay? So that's over a 40% swing in expected goals for and against across the season, across the whole season. That includes Hamilton, Ross County, everything. Next, let's look at really basic stats. Just shots. How many shots are we getting away? You don't score if you don't take shots. Shots, volume, just pure volume of shots. Never mind quality. We've done quality. Quality's down enormously. But shot volume is down 11%. Are we allowing more shots? Yeah, hell we are. 8% more. So again, 19% swing, shots for and against. Let's look at getting possession in the box. You're more likely to score if you take shots within the box. Getting possession in the box tends to create problems for the opposition. We are getting 21% less touches and possession within the opposition box. And the opposition are getting, guess what, 20% more possession in Celtic's box. And then finally, let's look at, you know, the quality of the chances created. So these are the quality of the passes that are creating chances, expected assists. The quality of the chances Celtic are creating is down by a factor of 18%. And the quality of the chances that the opposition are creating are up 19%. So what you see over some of these very basic but absolutely key metrics that underpin team performance is up to a 40% swing in terms of, you know, positive minus between what Celtic are doing and what the opposition are doing. If that sort of ratio was to be extrapolated out and actually you looked at the points Celtic got in the SPFL on that basis, we'd essentially be battling hard with Aberdeen for second place on around about the same number of points. And, you know, I believe that performance does get reflected in results. So actually, if we carry on, we're looking at being the number of points that Aberdeen got, or Motherwell as it was last season, Aberdeen-Motherwell title level got last season. That is the extent of the decline in performances. And if that isn't stark enough, and if that doesn't drive change, I'm sorry, I give up.
Yeah, wow, that's crazy. James, you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, so the one thing I wanted to add, and this gets down into game-to-game differentials. So if you just look at, you know, really if an XG differential is within one in a game, you're basically getting to the point of a coin flip of dropping points, right? So you may not necessarily lose. You can kind of think of about like that's, you have a 50% chance of winning. Again, there's a sliding scale, but just for conversation, 50% chance of winning, 25% chance of drawing, and 25% chance of losing. And that's basically where we were at with Ross County. So we've been doing, I think we have six league games. This is just talking league games where we've had an XG differential in that window. We've actually been lucky so far this season, if you can believe that, right? So when Alan quotes those 40% shifts, we've outperformed our XG by a pretty significant margin so far this season. And we've actually surrendered less in the way of goals relative to our aggregate XG. So we could have some bad luck, if you want to put it that way, worse luck than we've had, let's put it that way, maybe, where we could score less and surrender more goals with the exact same performance levels. The scary part is we could actually play a little better and just have a little, you know, lower luck and still have the same results, mm-hmm. right? The same output. I always look at benchmarking relative to our main competitors. And the other scary part about this, Rangers have absolutely had some, we'll call it luck on the defensive side, on the defending side. So they've basically surrendered half the goals relative to their XG. But they've won every game on an XG basis. We've lost two, where we, you know, basically surrendered more XG than what we generated. They've only had two games where they've been within one XG, both of which they drew, or I said one of them, which they drew. So as Alan talks about, as you extrapolate this over a season, if we keep going at this rate, or even if we improve, which we really should, I mean, given the level of teams that we're facing here in the next month, even if we just keep playing like crap with the teams being poor, you know, we outperformed Ross County, and not as well as we should have, but, on an XG basis, we still were, you know, the better team as far as overall chance creation. The risks here are really high that we're going to end up in the 75-point range or 80-point range, something like that for the season, just dropping points, games one-off, draws here and there. And the way Rangers are playing, and they have had they haven't had good luck in their XG creation, right? They've basically scored around the same number of goals as what their XG would suggest they should. So they could, they go through, this is why I keep saying that they've been very good, but they could also get better, which is a little frightening, yeah. Given their results and how poor the rest of the league is. So, you know, this is why I've been so urgent about why we need to fix these issues, is because this disparity is so wide in quality, in performance levels, we haven't been doing the structural things to address them. And you know, this is, goes back to why we need to change in decision-making. Like, I'd love Lennon to wake up and start making better decisions. I lost my conviction level that was going to happen a few months ago. The other part I'll add to this, the last thing I'll say is, as we head towards Sunday, is St. Johnstone's actually third in the league in the XG table, let's call it. Their defending is actually on par with ours for the season so far, and concession XG conceded per game. So this is a dangerous game we're going into Sunday. This is not a complacency game. And the way they played us until we brought on the two strikers and the two striker system when we were at St. Johnstone, that resulted in the two late goals with Griffiths and Kamal. You know, we need to be worried about Sunday. It's not to say they're gonna win, but the probabilities of us playing like this and dropping points, I think, again, coin flip, and that's way too low.
Yeah, it really is crazy that we're going into a game with St. Johnstone and we're not really that fully confident that we can get a win and that we'll be on par with St. Johnstone in terms of how we're performing. It's just indicative of where we're at with Celtic over the last couple of weeks. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when AC Milan beat us tonight in the Europa League, and then where Lennon stands and what happens in the next couple of weeks. But we are out of time for this episode, unfortunately, guys. I know there's a lot more that we wanted to get into, but we can get into it over the next few weeks. For all those listening, we are available to download now on the Spreaker app or in iTunes or on Spotify, and you can follow us on the Huddle Breakdown on Twitter and on Instagram as well. That's where we'll be posting all the material, and you can follow us on YouTube as well. Make sure to subscribe and leave a comment. Let us know what you think of the podcast. Let us know if there's anything you want us to actually go into in terms of topics, in terms of looking at the performance of certain players. We are open to suggestions over the next couple of weeks. So really hope you enjoyed that podcast. Really hope things get better over the next few weeks. My thanks to Alan and my thanks to James as well. We'll be back again with more Huddle Breakdown next week. Thanks for listening.